Business planning. Recruiting for a new section in a newly formed directorate was always going to have its difficulties. There were lots of questions such as what would the work involve, what skills were required, what was the new director like to work for, what was I like to work for as the department head? So would recruitment be restricted to those disgruntled in their current positions, those worried about the longevity of their current role, or a new boss? The whole organisation was in something of a state of flux, so certainties were in short supply. I tried to learn a little more about business planning, and in those pre-internet days had even resorted to the local reference library. Of more help was a seminar session arranged in London by one of the finance directors of a northern REC, and coincidentally someone I'd met earlier at the Strasbourg conference. The session was very helpful and gave me confidence, as it was clear that some of the other newly appointed heads of this function were in a similar position to me, trying to make sense of it. Two particularly helpful hints were firstly to read the book Practical Corporate Planning by John Argenti, who I was to discover was something of a guru in this new field of corporate science stroke art. The second hint was that there was a London-based body called the Strategic Planning Society, and a membership of this seemed to be a good idea. I quickly arranged a subscription, and with a combination of their journal, the Argenti manual, and a healthy dose of confidence stroke optimism, thought I was now enough of an expert to convince some recruits to join my new team. I don't really remember many details, but I think the role of business planning analyst was advertised with a sketchy description of the work, and I had a few informal conversations with people I knew in the company. After the success of the privatisation efficiency study, I'd been given a promotion in grade. I was able to present a picture that this might be an area of coming importance with promotion and growth opportunities. One of the interviews gives substance to the fact that these were different times. I was to interview a candidate along with the outgoing head of management services, who admitted the candidate was known to him. After the interview, we were discussing the candidate we'd just seen, when the colleague said, "Well, he's very able and bright, but he is Welsh." Somewhat shocked, I interrupted and said, "David, just let me say..." David carried on, "Well, I know I'm stereotyping, but they can be prickly and argumentative." I tried again to interrupt, "David, before you say any more, but he was on a roll. Some of them just have a chip on their shoulder, and they go out of their way to..." I couldn't take any more. I loudly shouted, "David, I'm Welsh." Undaunted, he answered, "Good God, are you? It doesn't show." Anyway, we gave Alan the job, and he could be difficult, but not so much with me, and we didn't refer David to the Race Relations Board. Different times. So we'd recruited my first team member. Three more came by different routes, but all in all, I felt we formed a capable and enthusiastic team, and were ready to face the challenges ahead. Unfortunately, one of our greatest challenges was to come from an unexpected quarter. We were given a new manager as part of the flurry of recruitments around the time of privatisation to inject PLC expertise into the dozy world of nationalised utilities. At least that was the way some of the new blood saw it, and our guy was no exception. In a short period of time, he made enemies all over the company, which actually worked to my advantage in that many of the directors and business heads was specifically asked that me and my team would work with them on their business plans and even make specific requests that this arrangement with my director, to the exclusion of the manager. In a vain attempt to raise team morale, I asked my team members whether we could think of anything positive to say about our erstwhile boss. There was a long and embarrassing silence, eventually broken by Alan, reluctantly stating, "Well, he's very clean." Although, as we all agreed, this was an irrelevant benefit in someone that much of the company's senior management were reluctant to meet with. It was also Alan that had an eerie experience one lunchtime. After a particularly frustrating dialogue in our boss's office, he announced he was going to straight out of the office for a lunchtime walk to clear his head. When I returned to our office after a quick lunch in the staff restaurant, I found a pale and confused-looking Alan sitting at his desk, staring into space, and slowly shaking his head. Sensing all was not well, I managed to get him to describe his distress. He stated that we all knew our boss as a one-off and had distinctly annoying character traits, but Alan now believed he was not of this world and possibly capable of time travel and or teleportation, and this may explain why our board had been conned into employing him. I needed more proof, which Alan provided. After I left you in the office, still talking to him, I walked straight up Grand Avenue, and at the top I met him walking towards me from the opposite direction. He couldn't have got there. I don't understand it. The mystery was solved later that day, when our resident genius told me that his twin brother was in Hove that day and had called for him for lunch. This was mildly reassuring to Alan when I told him, although he darkly speculated that he hoped the company would not be stupid enough to recruit the other twin. Having been established for the title of business planning, we had to convince the new directorates that there was some merit in having us internal outsiders help or interfere, depending on your perspective. It's said that business planning is as much an art as a science, and I agree with this. Some of the process is about a realistic assessment of where the business is currently before you can develop a vision or ambition of where it can be taken and what can be achieved. Along with all the fine words, there is a need for hard data, and often this is deftly hidden from outsiders to support a story. One case in point was to help the operations director gain a better understanding of variations in profitability between his four divisions. Some analysis revealed that the least profitable division was winning high turnover from competitive bids with major construction projects, but lower profitability margins, while another division, less successful in winning contracts, had redeployed much of their workforce on internal work, such as rewiring their own offices, which due to some historical practice was charged out at a guaranteed markup, inflating their profits. We painted a stark picture suggesting that the division could become more profitable if they dispensed with the services of their marketing team, as they clearly weren't winning contracts. Often it was not popular work, as home truths can be painful. We also helped draw up and review plans for the company's retail division, where it was becoming apparent that the scale of the operation was making it difficult to compete with much larger national competitors. Around this time, I experienced my 40th birthday, which I planned to be low-key, but unbeknown to me had been planned by my wife and work colleagues as a grand surprise garden party. I was kept out of the way by being asked to take and collect a neighbour's daughter from some Saturday activities, while food was brought in wheelbarrows from storage at neighbours and the marquee was erected. By the time I arrived home, the field part of our garden contained dozens of cars and some 140 friends who were hiding behind the hedge. It was a great success once I'd got over the shock, and lovely to see old friends and colleagues from near and far, and definitely a great example of my wife's organisational abilities and my friend's powers of discretion. Gradually, there was a move to integrate the planning function into the operating divisions, and I like to think we'd help with the transfer of knowledge and establish the discipline of business planning in the group. My department was rebranded as business development, with more emphasis on new unregulated business ventures, and the first of these was an overseas consultancy joint venture. The intention was for the company to explore and develop business opportunities outside our core energy business, but to use our existing skills in these new markets. The objective was to increase profitability by adding unregulated profits to our existing regulated energy earnings. The difficulties with my manager didn't improve. There was a classic case where we'd been approached by ESP, the Irish state-owned company, with the option of setting up a joint venture consultancy to access the international aid market. The two companies had good experience of working together on contracts associated with the Channel Tunnel project. ESP had been successfully carrying out assignments all around the world, now looking to joint venture with the UK electricity company, which would allow access to contracts funded by the Overseas Development Agency, the ODA. Unfortunately, the initial meeting in Dublin had not gone well, and the accusation was that my manager had insulted them with his private enterprise expertise, And they were quoted as saying, if this was the sort of managers we had, then a joint venture for them was out of the question. But there was still an appetite for exploring the opportunity by our board, so I was tasked with diplomatically recovering our reputation. After a phone call to Dublin, I was asked if I could meet with them soon in London at the offices of the ODA and give some assurances to the person there responsible for electricity contracts that we were serious in working together. But they cautioned me that this person, Dr. Jones, had been difficult to meet with. So I felt I was on trial to prove something and placed a call to Dr. Jones. He was initially frosty, but agreed a meeting some weeks ahead. But before I finished the call, I asked him if he knew an old school friend of mine from Swansea, Jack Jones, who also worked at the ODA. How do you know Jack? He asked. I explained he was my first school friend from the age of 4, and we still see one another occasionally. His attitude was transformed. I regularly have lunch with Jack. We call him Jones the Disaster, as he runs the emergency aid desk for disaster recovery after earthquakes, etc. Come in early before our meeting and we three Welsh refugees can have coffee together. He then put me on hold and established that Jack was there all week, subject to no new disasters, and suggested we meet later the same week. The ASB party were very impressed with the speed at which I'd arranged the meeting, and even more pleased when I explained the Welsh connection. They said this was closer to how things were done in Dublin, and so later that week they're ready to meet with a positive reception at the ODA when they arrived and found me reminiscing and drinking coffee with the Jones boys. The joint venture took several trips to Dublin to set up, and on each occasion my new Irish colleagues looked after me very hospitably, as well as any other colleagues I'd brought with me to later finalise the JV. A car collected me from the airport. I was put up in the Shelbourne Hotel, city centre, and enjoyed some pleasant business suppers. One visit, I was asked if I liked music and was told there was a piano recital in the City University that they would take me to. I must have been unconvincing in my enthusiasm, as they said, I shouldn't worry, as it was mostly chatting and drinking, interspersed with short spells of music, and would be followed by dinner out. The joint venture was a success, winning contracts around the world, including Thailand, the Baltic States, some work in the Caribbean and South Africa. Typically, having set it up, the furthest I got from home was Dublin, but it was very popular with the staff deployed on these contracts. The staffing of my department was added to through the recruitment of an accountant with business development experience in the world of mergers and acquisitions in the city. Arthur was a welcome addition to the group, bringing real-world business development experience and greater credibility in financial appraisals when being challenged by the finance director, who always wanted his own accountants to check the finances in our proposals. Our finances must have impressed the FD, as a few months later he offered Arthur a position in the finance directorate, which to my relief he turned the offer down. I remember the personnel department amusing me by telling me they thought Arthur was an old-fashioned name. My reply with an arched eyebrow suggests they checked their records of a certain Geoffrey A. Dendel, which led to an embarrassed apology. This was also a time of some unease with the personnel department, who commissioned consultants to appraise jobs in our department for promotion to the new senior management group, where contracts would be offered with enhanced benefits such as share options, an improved car scheme, as well as salary increases. Three of my assistant managers were due to be assessed, and having gone through the process myself the previous year, I knew there was merit in preparation. To further complicate matters, we were notified there would be just one candidate interviewed, and the result applied to all three positions. Of the three candidates, two were graduates, one with industry experience and the other with external business development experience. In the event the candidate with an accountancy qualification, mergers experience, as well as an MBA, was concluded as the strongest option. And after a few hours of joint preparation, the interview was successful, with all three subsequently promoted. A happy couple of years of assessing and developing business opportunities followed, before the inevitable company restructuring was to throw all the balls up in the air again. Before this was to happen, some more of those business ventures, occurred. Southern Gas. The next large-scale business development that I was involved in was a gas business to take advantage of the newly deregulated gas market in the UK. This was 90s Britain, with new phone companies competing for business, gas companies offering electricity, and new companies able to sell gas through the British gas network. We were approached by a UK arm of a US utility who were looking for regional partners to market gas supplies in competition with British Gas. They were looking for business partners with proven experience of billing and customer management, and we were an obvious choice. An American utility had set up a UK trading subsidiary to buy gas supplies here, and were looking to set up a number of joint venture companies. With the recent legislative changes in the energy market, they could be licensed to sell gas directly to customers. A preliminary presentation had been made to our board of directors, who concluded it was worth exploring further. As the company's business development manager, I was tasked with doing this. It was one of my initially most uncomfortable experiences, as somewhat ironically, considering the nature of the business, I felt I was coming to this rather cold. Didn't have much time to prepare, as the meeting had been arranged to take place a few days after the presentation to the board. I knew that there was a relatively new business analyst in another part of the organisation who joined us from an oil and gas industry, and a friend who worked with him suggested a chat with John could be useful. He was happy to help, and I learnt a few new terms used in the industry, such as take or pay contracts, but I still felt relatively unprepared for the next day's meeting. The offices were a short walk from London's Victoria Station, and unbeknown to me at the time, my journey could have taken a very nasty turn. During the walk, I heard a distant muffled thump. Later in the day, I heard through a news broadcast that IRA terrorists had exploded a bomb on the station concourse, which sadly had resulted in one fatality and dozens of injuries. Despite this narrow escape for me, which I only learnt about later, the day went well, as my tactic of omitting great ignorance about many important aspects of the gas business allowed my prospective business partners to patiently explain the process. I was starting to realise that my position was one that had been accurately described to me some time earlier as a gatekeeper. For business proposals, this meant that the prospective partners needed to both give me a sound enough understanding and then convince me that there was merit in the company appraising it further. In a sense, I was the gateway to potential approval by the board. The gas company was an early success, and our development team handed it over to operational staff. Other opportunities were appraised, some discarded, some pursued. I recall trying to convince my board that the mobile telephony market growth projections that we'd seen were realistic, and being told it would be unlikely that mobile phone ownership would ever become universal. What sort of people would let their children have phone accounts? Funny now, in hindsight. The situation with the manager was all a bit embarrassing as well as irritating, but fortunately, the irritation wasn't long-lived, and after less than 2 years, he parted ways with the company by mutual agreement. One of the most irritating things about him was a habit of referring to himself in the third person, which I personally found bizarre and suggested an underlying psychological problem. When he left, I'd already been promoted onto a senior management personal contract, and it's perhaps telling that his position wasn't filled. It was time again for a company restructuring, and this time it would include devolving many of the head office corporate functions out to business units, with a new slimmed-down head office to be established at a new site. In organisations, a powerful reinforcement of change is to make people uncomfortable. This was certainly the case with this move, as the head office, with its population of several hundred, had been in the five-storey Victorian seafront building since nationalisation in 1948, and there were a few staff who probably began their careers there not long after. It was declared that the company would be embracing the current fashion for a core corporate function head office, of essential functions that sat outside the operational activities and needed to be near the board of directors. These were declared as corporate group finance, legal, shareholding, pensions, director support and group strategy and regulation. There was a suggestion that the new head office should be only some 50 people, but the prestige of being at the centre of things was tempered for most by the announcement that the new offices would be some 20 miles inland, near Crawley, an anonymous new town, and rather different from Brighton and Hove. One announcement stated that our building in Hove was no longer fit for purpose for modern business use, so it was with some sense of irony that it was sold to Brighton and Hove Council for them to use it as their offices. Personally, it made limited difference to me as I lived out to the northeast from Brighton and had a similar commute to the new office to the west of me. The main difference was my new role. The new structure had no place for my director, who took early retirement, but around this time I was asked by the new chief executive, who I had already completed some work for, both in business planning and the establishment of our gas company, to undertake a short-term project on his behalf.